Hello there, and welcome back. I am Lizzie, your Millennial Movie Matchmaker. So what are we going to be talking about on today's episode? Well, I talked my husband into spending $19.99 on renting the newest movie, Promising Young Woman. That's right. I was able to bat my eyelashes enough and then make the argument. You know, this movie is technically in theaters and, you know, babe, if we were to go see it in theaters, it'd be costing us way more than 20 bucks because the tickets themselves are 20 bucks. And then you know that your girl is going to want popcorn and a soda pop. So maybe sneak in some peanut butter M&Ms from my last episode. And so really you're saving money by letting me rent this and watch it from the comfort of my own home, and you're being COVID compliant. So it's a win-win situation. So that's right. We are going to be reviewing Promising Young Woman. So it's a new movie starring Carey Mulligan, and it is all about her character, Cassie. She is a med school dropout now working at a coffee shop. So she is a barista by day. But by night, she likes to go out to the club and get absolutely wasted, or so it would seem, so that a, quote, nice guy will offer to take her home and then proceed to start taking advantage of her because she is so wasted. However, little do they know that she is actually stone cold sober. And she is more or less trying to catch them in the act of trying to have unconsensual relations and obviously scare these guys shitless while doing so. So she is what I would call a femme fatale. And so that is what we're going to be talking about today. I'm going to get to my official review of it a little bit later, but in true Millennial Movie Matchmaker fashion, I'm going to talk about my top five within that same genre. And what better way to do it than talk about the femme fatale? Now, I did actually look up the official version of femme fatale because, you know, you could argue that a femme fatale is just any woman in a leading role that takes on a position of power. You know, so when I first kind of thought about it, I was like, well, you know, a great movie that I love about a woman that isn't afraid to take what she wants is a little movie called Misery, starring a young Kathy Bates. But here's the catch. A femme fatale uses her sexuality to cause death and destruction around her. So it's all about using her sexuality to manipulate those around her to bring about destruction. Now, no offense to Kathy Bates, but I don't think that Misery is her finest moment in terms of aesthetics. So we are truly, truly going to focus on the actual definition of a femme fatale. So we're going to stick to that of a woman who is using her sexuality to ruin the lives of those around her. Basically, think about it like the song from Rita Ora, the "I'm gonna love ya, I'm gonna love ya like a black widow, baby." You know, it's like you're sexy and you know it. I'm gonna eat ya alive. All right, so let's go ahead and get started. So, in true Millennial Movie Matchmaker fashion, we are always gonna have an honorable mention. Now, this is a little bit of a random one, but I promise I have a point. And I want to talk about particularly just the femme fatale in this movie because this particular movie deserves to be in a genre where I can really dive into the entire movie, not just a particular scene. And that is going to be The Shining. Again, I'm going to try my absolute best to never double dip a movie. I'm obviously going to have to because The Shining, I'm sure anyone who has seen this is immediately thinking, what the hell are you doing putting The Shining as a femme fatale movie, especially when one Jack Nicholson playing Jack Torrance is the main antagonist. And well, like I said, I don't want to talk about the actual movie, The Shining, because that belongs in a category all of its own. It is such a juggernaut. But there is a particular scene that defines a femme fatale, in my opinion, and shook me to my core when I watched it for the first time. Now, if you haven't watched The Shining or heard of it, I'm not going to dive into the plot too much because, again, I want to save this movie for a different time. So you've got Jack Torrance. He's wandering around the Overlook Hotel, just kind of moseying around, right? Well, then he stumbles into a little place called Room 237. And for anyone who has seen the movie, you know that right off the bat, it is set from the very beginning of this movie that room is strictly off limits. So Jack goes into the room. Everything seems fine. It's decorated with all the amazing 70s carpet and wallpaper furniture, the whole works. And what does he see but a beautiful woman in the bathtub? And she's sexy. She's got her hair all wet and slicked back. She's got those perky breasts and all the things in all the right places. And she doesn't say a word, which probably just adds to her allure. And she gets up, dripping wet out of the bathtub, and then walks right over to Jack, again, not saying a word, and they share an intense, passionate kiss with one another. Now, Jack's super duper into it. He is perfectly fine leaving behind Shelley Duvall, who wouldn't, and, you know, he's down. But all of a sudden, out of his periffs, he notices that this beautiful woman that he was making out with is now a decrepit and haggard old woman. And that's right, you've guessed it. She is the ultimate femme fatale because she lured Jack into a making out fest in order to reveal her true identity, which is a disgusting old soggy corpse. And again, for anybody who needs to understand the plot of this movie, the Overlook Hotel is massively haunted and it is littered with ghosts that are trying to consume you. So this particular ghost, it used her sexuality to lure Jack in. Now, seriously, this movie scared the shit out of me. That particular scene was so haunting. And now they leave out a little bit. So of course, The Shining was immortalized by Stanley Kubrick's movie starring Jack Nicholson. But I'm sure as many of you know, it was actually first a novel written by Stephen King, The Goat. And they leave out a lot about this particular character in the movie. So in the novel, her character is Mrs. Massey, and she goes to the Overlook Hotel years ago. She's looking to have an affair. She's a cougar, so she's got this young hottie that she has brought to the hotel in order to have an amazing weekend together. And it turns out that he would be, I suppose, the opposite version of femme fatale, or the male version, rather. And he has no interest in sleeping with Miss Massey. He actually just wants her nice Porsche. And so he makes off with her car. Mrs. Massey is so unbelievably distraught over this. And by the way, when this all happens, she is that beautiful version of herself, but she decides to overdose and take her own life inside the Overlook Hotel, which I'm sure she didn't know at the time, but would encapsulate her in there forever and doom her to just wilt away in that disgusting bathtub until years later when Jack Torrance walks in. Again, the movie itself does not revolve around that. That is just one very, very small bite of the movie. The Shining will be on a different podcast where I will really, really dive in. I promise you that. But for now, to me, this is an honorable mention because while the entire movie does not revolve around this particular woman, Mrs. Massey, she is the epitome of a femme fatale. She is using that sexy wet body to lure in Jack Torrance into a forever prison in the Overlook Hotel. And if that's not a femme fatale, then I don't know what is. All right, so let's move on to my official picks. So again, we are talking about our femme fatale, the women who use their sexuality to bring destruction to those around them. So we're going to go with my number 5 pick, and that is going to be Fatal Attraction. So this movie starts out by introducing you to Dan Gallagher. He is played by Michael Douglas, otherwise known as like the ultimate goat of all of these 90s crime movies. I mean, he literally always plays more or less the exact same character. Like, he's always very career focused and motivated. You know, he tries to be a good dad. He's on the surface a good husband, but not really. And when you strip everything else away that he is on paper, ultimately, he just always plays a prick. He's painted this picture of being a family man. You know, he's got a great business and he's great at his job, but he has a lovely wife and a sweet little daughter, and everything seems to be going great. Well, cue in Alex Forrest, played by Glenn Close. Now, they happen upon each other through a business exchange, and Alex is everything that his wife is not. You know, she's sexy and she's cool and she's laid back and she has all of these kind of amazing sexy qualities that make every conversation with her feel new and exciting and fun. So you guessed it, Dan and Alex end up having a very steamy, very sticky affair with one another. And everything seems like it's going to be fine, you know. The wife and the daughter are out for the weekend, and so he's got the whole place to himself. So he is free to just have a weekend filled with sexcapades with Alex, and then he can go home and be an A-plus husband, an A-plus father, and go back to his life knowing that he had gotten away with it, right? Wrong. Well, it turns out that Alex is an absolute stage 5 clinger. More so than that, a stage 5 clinger is like that girl from Wedding Crashers was like, never leave me, goodbye, bye you. Well, Alex is more of, I would say if that's a stage 5, she's definitely like a stage 8, I would say, because when Dan makes it perfectly clear that what they had was just a one-time thing, she will not stop. She will go at any possible length to absolutely ruin his life. She will find ways to infiltrate his personal life, his business, and everything in between to basically make his life a living hell. Now, this movie is amazing. First and foremost, it's great propaganda for fidelity. Glenn Close was telling tabloids that for years, people were coming up to her saying, thank you so much. You've saved my marriage. Because yeah, I think that a lot of men were probably pretty afraid to have affairs on their wife, because Alex, she does that perfect thing where she puts on this facade of being cool and sexy in order to really get what she wants. You know, Taylor Swift even wrote about it in the song Blank Space. You know, she's that, find out what you want, be that girl for a month, wait, the worst is yet to come. Like, she totally nailed it. She basically was able to read Michael Douglas, see what he wanted, act like she's super, super aloof, and then cut to, she's listening to Madame Butterfly and flipping the light switch on and off in a maniacal fashion. She is absolutely crazy. And, you know, so I majored in psychology when I went to UK, and we actually, there was one class that I took where they actually asked us to watch this movie and then write a paper saying that what we actually thought that she would have, because Glenn Close actually consulted 2 different psychiatrists during this movie. So she actually went to great lengths to try to really be a woman that portrayed a mental illness. Now, I don't actually remember what I wrote it about, but I can tell you that from a little bit of research that the psychiatrists had diagnosed her with erotomania, which is basically the psychological condition where you have convinced yourself that somebody that you were in a romantic relationship, or more often than not, someone that you are not romantically involved in, that you have created a narrative in your mind that this person is obsessed with you and madly in love with you, and you will not accept any information to the contrary. And they're pretty spot on, because, you know, every attempt that Dan makes to push her away, you know, she doubles down. I mean, she does not give up. Gotta hand it to her. If you have not seen this movie, I highly recommend it. It is not super violent. There is, of course, the bunny scene. If you know, you know. If you don't know and you want a little bit of a trigger warning, feel free to DM me and I can walk you through it. But it is definitely one of those edge of your seat movies. It's a fun ride. It is absolutely I would consider this a psychological thriller. And quite honestly, in terms of cinema, this really is a classic. I mean, I really think that when you think about movies that have iconic scenes, you know, the running up the stairs in Rocky or the in Silence of the Lambs, to me, this movie is iconic. It is absolutely ingrained in modern pop culture. If you haven't already seen it yet, you got to do it. You got to go for it. All right, so let's go ahead and move on into my number 4 pick, and that is going to be Gone Girl. Now, this movie revolves all around the character of Amy Dunn. She is played by Rosamund Pike, and she is married to Nick Dunn, who is played by Ben Affleck. Now, this is also Ben Affleck's directorial debut, so it's doubly special for him. Now, this movie starts off really showing you their courtship. So it takes you back, shows you how they got together. You know, Amy is from a prestigious family. She actually is the inspiration behind her parents' famous children's series, Amazing Amy. And it's a little screwed up because, you know, she tells these stories of, like, you know, Amy, the actual Amy, auditions for the orchestra, doesn't make it. And then Amazing Amy gets, like, first chair in her orchestra and so forth and so on. So it's like every single time that the actual real life Amy fails, it provides inspiration to write a children's book about Amy succeeding. So her parents almost can live vicariously through this false version of Amy. A little screwed up. Anyway, so it revolves all around their courtship with each other. They date, they have lots of amazing sex, they end up getting married, and then cut to their 5-year wedding anniversary. Now, by this time, you can pretty much tell that the sparkle has worn off in their marriage. You know, he goes into a bar, starts drinking relatively early in the morning, hanging out with his sister, and when he comes back, he notices that Amy is missing. Now, there are signs that there could be some foul play. You know, there's a table that's broken and most of her clothes and her belongings are still there. But other than that, you know, there's no blood or any indication that she's been harmed. So what's happened to Amy? Where's Amy? You know, that's the focus of this entire movie. So it tries to take you inside what it would be like to actually experience this. You know, as bystanders, we see it on the news sometimes, unfortunately, something like this happens. And they really want to take you for a ride that feels like you get a front row seat. So everyone is trying to figure out what's happened to Amy. You've got search parties, her parents open up a hotline of, you know, 1-800 tips for Amy, all of the things. Now, of course, in any true crime fashion, whenever something happens to the wife, they tend to look at the husband first. So everybody is looking at Nick. He is under a magnifying glass. And quite frankly, his apathy for the situation does not make him look good. You know, at a particular search party that they're having, you know, a woman is asking to take a picture with him and he's smiling and looking happy. And basically every single move that he's making is being analyzed and scrutinized by the media to make him look guilty. Now, did he do it? Did he not do it? Where is Amy? Now, because this is a femme fatale episode, I have to be able to describe the femme fatale portion. So, spoiler alert, you heard it here first. I'm gonna spoil it. If you haven't seen Gone Girl and you don't want it ruined for you, fast forward. You've been warned. Shocker, Amy is alive and well. Everything has been one gigantic ruse in order to frame Nick. Now, Amy caught wind of Nick having an affair with some perky-breasted young woman who just so happens to be dancing in a Robin Thicke music video. And, she's not too happy about that. So she feels like her whole life has been orchestrated to be the girl that Nick wants in order to get a certain byproduct out of that. So truly what makes her a femme fatale is the fact that everything about her is disingenuous. And she even admits that. She has completely morphed who she is in order to yield a result out of Nick, of who she wants him to be. So basically their entire courtship has just been one giant manipulation. She actually says it so perfectly herself. So imagine this scene. So for the entire first half of the movie, you are thinking that this is going to be a whodunit movie. You know, is it going to be Nick? Is it going to be one of Amy's ex-boyfriends? Could it be maybe Nick's sister? I mean, there's not very many red herrings. All signs pretty much are pointing to Nick, but you feel like there's got to be a twist, right? Then halfway through the movie, it cuts to Amy driving in a car, drinking out of a liter of cola, and she explains why she has done what she's done. She says, and I quote, "Nick never loved me. He loved a girl who didn't exist, a girl I was pretending to be, the cool girl." Men always use that as a defining compliment, right? She's a cool girl. Being a cool girl means that I am hot, brilliant, funny, and adores football, poker, and dirty jokes, who plays video games and chugs beer. A woman who loves threesomes and anal sex and jams chili dogs into my mouth like I'm hosting the world's biggest culinary gangbang. She goes on for a little bit and then she continues, "But it's tempting to be the cool girl. For someone like me who likes to win, it's tempting to be the girl every guy wants. When I met Nick, I knew that's what he wanted. For him, I was willing to try. And I made him smarter, sharper. I forced him to rise to my level. And I was happier for those few years, pretending to be someone else, than I've ever been before or after. But it had to stop. Committing to Nick and feeling safe with Nick, being happy with Nick, made me realize that there was a real Amy in there, and she was so much better, more interesting and complicated and challenging than the cool girl." So I want to dissect that, because to me, that is, I think that there's a layer of everybody that tries that in the beginning, right? I mean, when you're dating, that's when it's the most fun. And then usually when that twinkle wears off, you know, that's when you start getting pissed at your spouse for not shutting the cabinets. So, I mean, to a degree, we all can do that. However, what makes Amy a true femme fatale is the level of commitment that she has. I mean, she literally sends Nick on the most wild of goose chases, and she is on a mission for revenge. She wants to teach Nick a lesson. And quite frankly, she doesn't care about who she has to step on, or worse, in order to get what she wants. Now, this movie is so amazing. Again, I'm sorry for any of those who I've spoiled that for. I still think, even if that is new information for you, it is worth watching. I mean, this movie it's dark, but it absolutely lures you in. I mean, this is one of those movies where you are clinging to every single scene. It is just shot so brilliantly, and the acting is so amazing. Now, this is actually based on the novel by Gillian Flynn. And Reese Witherspoon, of all people, so she started her production company, Hello Sunshine, which essentially is a company that is dedicated to film adaptations of novels that have strong female protagonists. And so she loves this movie. She loved the character of Amy and how layered she was. And so this is one of her first movies that she made with her new production company. And they actually asked her if she wanted to star as Amy. Now, Reese, being self-aware and, in my opinion, just all around brilliant, she felt like, as much as she would love that, she is just not right for the part. She needs someone who isn't afraid to be fully seductive while still feeling innocent. And Rosamund Pike nailed it. I mean, she has this girl next door vibe to her, but you can tell underneath those eyes, those wheels are a turning and she's cooking up something that is not going to turn out well for you. All right, so let's move on to my number three pick. And that is going to be Cruel Intentions. I love this movie. Now, growing up, particularly in high school, I mean, this movie was all anybody talked about. This was everyone's like sexual awakening. Like every single person that I knew was absolutely obsessed with this movie. Looking back at it, I mean, wow. I mean, this movie is so sexually charged. You know, when we were kids, it was somewhat of a different time. I know right now I sound like, you know, when I was your age, it only cost a nickel for a Coke. But truly, I think that rewatching this movie, there's so much that does not hold up. But I think before the hashtag MeToo movement, this movie was definitely one of the greats, just one of the absolute classic teen movies. So let's go ahead and dive into the plot of this movie. So the movie really first revolves around two step-siblings. So you have Catherine, who is our femme fatale. She is played by Sarah Michelle Gellar, and her stepbrother Sebastian, who is played by Ryan Phillippe. And now they are the upper echelon of New York City. They've got the estates and the Hamptons and all the fancy cars, and they go to the best prep school that money can buy. Now, this movie definitely has a tangled web, so try to stick with me here. So again, you've got Catherine and Sebastian, step siblings. Now, both of them are what I would call your bad apples. So Catherine has this perfect, doting, sweet schoolgirl, innocent vibe to all the adults, but she is absolutely the manipulative snake underneath all of that. And Sebastian is pretty much a out and about flag waving playboy. You know, he makes absolutely no apologies for his antics, and he pretty much has a rotten reputation for being an absolute womanizer. So Catherine is dating a gentleman named Court. That's where this all starts. So Catherine is dating Court. Now Court dumps Catherine for a young and innocent little girl named Cecile. Cecile is played by none other than Selma Blair. Now she was 28 when they filmed this movie, but she plays a 15-year-old girl. She actually does great because she has this like snotty vibe to her, which really, really works in her benefit as a sassy teenager. So Catherine, being a true femme fatale, decides that she wants to enact revenge on Court. And how does she want to do that? Well, Court is interested in Cecile for her sweet purity and charity. So she decides to destroy that. So she enlists Sebastian to seduce her and turn her into the town tramp. Now, Sebastian is down. He's absolutely down. But in his mind, this is too easy of a conquest, right? You know, he wants to have fun this summer. He wants to do more than just bang every chick in town, do drugs, go to strip clubs, and live off of mommy and daddy's trust fund, you know, because that's just boring. So he decides that he wants to take on a true challenge. And cue Annette Hargrove. So she is the newest student going to the prep school, and she just so happens to be the new headmaster's daughter. Now, I would say big flex. She writes an article for 17 Magazine, and it is through that article that Sebastian is able to notice that she has got to be his biggest conquest. Because what is the article about? Well, it is about how she intends to stay pure until she marries her boyfriend, Trevor. So for Sebastian, this is the ultimate conquest. You know, screwing the headmaster's daughter before school starts would give him, would solidify his reputation as being the biggest and baddest playboy of all time. So Catherine and Sebastian make a wager because Catherine is absolutely convinced that he has no luck. So they make a little bet that if Sebastian is successful, then he is going to be able to have the one conquest that is completely off limits to him. And that is Catherine herself. Because remember, they're brother and sister through marriage. So not quite incestual, but I would say close enough. And if Sebastian is unsuccessful, then he has to give away his hot rod of a car. He's got a sexy Jaguar in this movie that Catherine's got her eye on. So there's two plots really going on within this movie. There's the first plot of Sebastian just doing Catherine a solid and seducing Cecile, and then their big bet. Now, of course, this movie wouldn't be a teen movie if someone didn't fall in love with somebody else. And as you can imagine, Annette, who is played by Reese Witherspoon, is as sweet and wonderful as she can be. You know, she's not serious or stuffy. She can make him laugh. And she really breaks down Sebastian's walls, and they end up falling madly in love with one another. Now, what makes Catherine such an ultimate femme fatale is she's got like a very Lady Macbeth vibe to her, and the fact that she absolutely uses her sexuality to manipulate everybody to get what she wants. You know, she is convinced that she's going to use her sexuality to manipulate Sebastian to do what he wants, to seduce Cecile, and even does a little bit of it herself with Cecile. You know, she befriends her and convinces her that they are the best of friends, and gives this narrative to Cecile about how sleeping around is so normal, and really tries to get Cecile to feel very comfortable with her sexuality, but not in an empowering way, in a way that is really honestly taking it away from her. You know, she's really robbing her of the ability to experience sexuality in a healthy way, rather than she's convincing her that sex is casual and that you don't have to have feelings and that everybody does it. And, you know, when she doesn't get her way, then she set out to destroy the people around her, not because she wants anything that they have, but rather that misery just loves company. You know, she is absolutely hellbent when she sees Sebastian falling for Annette. She gets jealous and she decides to mess with Sebastian's head and create this false narrative in his mind that he's completely incapable of being loved. And she is just, I mean, she's a piece of work. To think that she could only be 17 years old and already be that maniacal. Damn. I love this movie. Again, I rewatching it, it certainly makes me question, like, at what age I'm going to feel comfortable letting my kids watch it, because it is just so, so sexually charged. But also, again, it was just a different time. I think that this nowadays, I don't think that this movie would be very well received. I mean, the way that they sexually manipulate Cecile really is quite sad to watch as an adult. But there's still this element of this movie that is so likable. I mean, Sebastian is not a good guy. By all accounts, he's a pretty terrible. But he's got that arc where you watch him soften and you watch him fall in love with Annette. And he's got the perfect teen heartthrob smile to go with it that you just can't help but root for him. And I absolutely love the music in this movie. I mean, I won't give away the ending because on the off chance that you haven't seen this, the ending is so redemptive and amazing. But you've got that amazing song, the and I won't go on, but it is Bittersweet Symphony is what it's called if you want to Google it. But it is, it's such a good teen heartthrob movie. And it has got like the ultimate dream team of that time. And you've got Ryan Phillippe, Reese Witherspoon, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Joshua Jackson, Tara Reid even does a quick cameo right in the very beginning. And as most of you may know, so Ryan Phillippe and Reese Witherspoon, they were actually dating before production started on this movie. So they had Ryan Phillippe cast, Sarah Michelle Gellar was cast, they needed their Annette. And Ryan Phillippe met with the director and said, you know, why don't you meet with my girlfriend? And they met, they had dinner, they fell in love with Reese, and the director got down on one knee and begged Reese to take the part. And by the end of that dinner, she had signed on. So that was that. And of course, so there's some pretty iconic scenes in this movie, one of which is, so as I had previously mentioned, you know, Catherine is completely manipulating Sebastian to believe that he is absolutely incapable of ever being loved and giving Annette the kind of love that she truly deserves. So just when you think, oh, they're going to get together and everything's going to be great, Sebastian just has to fall victim to Catherine's grip, and they go and the two of them get in this massive fight. You know, Sebastian and Annette they're arguing, and apparently at the end of that scene, it got so heated that Ryan Phillippe, because, you know, remember, this is his girlfriend, you know, even though they're acting, this is his real life beau. And apparently he got so sick to his stomach that he went off the set and threw up, and that scene was so intense and so amazing, it only needed one take. And now, of course, they famously got married after this movie and had two beautiful children together. I don't know their names, but they are absolutely beautiful. And but they did eventually divorce a few years later. But I love that this romance came out of it. I mean, they were kind of like the Justin and Britney of cinema, in my opinion. I mean, they didn't prance around in denim suits, but I certainly think that they came with their own level of class. All in all, this movie is steamy, it is sexy, and it is such a fun ride. I absolutely recommend it. If you have not seen it yet, do yourself a favor. Obviously, suspend your imagination. Take everything with a little grain of salt, but I promise if you do that, you will have a good time. All right, so let's move on to my number two pick, and that is going to be To Die For. I love this movie. This movie, to me, it is like one of the first black comedies that I can remember ever watching, and perhaps that's why it stuck with me, but I absolutely love it. So it is starring Nicole Kidman. She plays Suzanne Stone, and she is married to Larry Marietto, and the entire movie starts with Larry Marietta's death. So he has died. He has been shot, and the whole movie revolves around a series of media interviews that are being done by Suzanne. So the movie hops back and forth from her media interviews and then cutting to all of the events that have led up to the present day. So you get a little bit of a backstory on both characters. So Larry works at his family's Italian restaurant, and it is pretty clear that his family is heavily involved in organized crime. So he's definitely a part of some kind of mob organization. And Suzanne, she's more of just kind of all-American middle-class gal who has got big dreams of being the next Barbara Walters, and she will do just about anything to get there. So she ends up landing a job working minimum wage at a very small TV network. And to her, this is big times. You know, this is getting her foot in the door. And she finagles her way to get on air to be the local weather girl. And from there, in her mind, her star is rising. Now, she, in true narcissistic fashion, feels like she needs to go out and find her own hard-hitting story. So she's convinced herself, if I can go out and I can film something and prove that I have what it takes to be an investigative reporter, that I will just naturally get a promotion, right? So she goes out to a high school and she introduces herself to all of them. And then she wants to film a day in the life. You know, she wants to be able to do an expose on the modern day high school experience. And that is when she is introduced to three young kids. You have got Jimmy, who is played by Joaquin Phoenix, Russell, who is played by Casey Affleck, and then Lydia, who is played by Allison Folland. And the three of them, you know, it's a 90s movie, so think like super, super grungy. And they're stoner kids, you know, obviously they're not getting straight A's. And Jimmy is absolutely infatuated with Suzanne. And you can tell that there's obviously a very inappropriate relationship that's a cooking between the two of them. Now, is Suzanne happy in her home? You know, that's a big part about this movie. You know, during those media interviews, they want to know how their marriage is. Because remember, Larry's dead. And not just dead, but he's been very clearly murdered. So what was your marriage like to Larry? And, you know, Suzanne doesn't outwardly say it in her media interview. But again, they cut to moments that have led up to those interviews. And it's very clear that Larry had a vision for Suzanne. You know, he supported her dreams, but he also really wants a housewife. You know, he wants somebody that's going to be home and be able to keep their house together and be a mother for their future children. And that is just not what Suzanne wants. It's very clear that they have different priorities. So, did Suzanne do it? Did Suzanne get one of the kids to do it for her? Is Suzanne totally innocent? We don't know. That's half the fun of this movie, but it is perfectly clear that Suzanne is a woman on a mission and she is not afraid to do a couple sexy dances in order to get what she wants. Now, this movie was actually inspired by the real life story of Pam Smart. I'm not going to go into detail about Pam Smart's actual case, because that would create a massive spoiler alert. So if you really want to know about it, you can Google it. But this, what I loved about this movie is that this was kind of the first movie that really capitalizes on the idea that in a lot of ways, the new quote celebrities of our time are people who are involved in true crime. You know, this actually came out the year of the O.J. Simpson trial. So man, did they hit the nail on the head. This movie is so much fun. It's obviously dark, but it still manages to be light and funny at times. And you've got so many fun side plots, you know, because as they're interviewing Suzanne, they're also interviewing Larry's family, and you're getting to see who they think did it. And again, I mean, these are people who are involved in the mob, so you can guarantee that they are not going to let whoever did this just walk away, right? I mean, this is a mob. Family is everything. You know, Goodfellas, The Godfather. I know what's up. So I highly recommend this movie. If you have not seen it, I truly think this is one of Nicole Kidman's best movies ever. And I love me some Nicole Kidman. I mean, any movie that she has been in, any role, really, I am down for. I find her to be so intoxicatingly beautiful. I just, oh, I absolutely love her. She's so good. I mean, she is such a chameleon. I mean, one minute she can be dancing around in a leopard print dress in this particular movie, And then can go from that to being an overly conservative mother who is terrified for her children's lives and the others, and then can be an adorable version of a witch in the movie Bewitched, where she, you know, twinkles her little nose. I mean, I know that movie completely flopped, but I thought she was so cute. But I love her, particularly in this movie. Her character is so vapid and shallow and narcissistic that she's so manipulative and so double-crossing, but yet she has actually convinced herself that she is a good person. You know, if you were to call her out on those characteristics, she would not only disagree with you, but be truly appalled and offended that you would even think those things of her. I mean, it's just absolutely brilliant. She says a line that kind of perfectly encapsulates her drive for wanting to be on TV and how it is rooted in such shallowness. It says, I quote, "You're not anybody in America unless you're on TV. On TV is where you learn about who you really are, because what's the point of doing anything worthwhile if no one's watching? And if people are watching, it makes you a better person." I mean, it's so good. And honestly, again, this movie was made in 1995. I feel like they knew that our world was on the precipice of a huge change because, you know, not too long after that was the dawn of the social medias, you know, the MySpace and the Facebook. And now it's even more prevalent with Gram and all the things. And, it's so good. You got to give it a watch. I'm not sure where you can find it streaming, but I promise you, if you invest the time in it, you will not regret it. You will have fun. You'll have a couple of laughs, but ultimately it is just a juicy, sexy, fun, good time. All right. So let's move on to my top femme fatale movie. And that is going to be Basic Instinct. This movie to me, whenever I think of a femme fatale, you know, again, someone who's using their sexuality to cause destruction around them, there is no other character that I think of than Catherine, played by Sharon Stone. She is the epitome of a femme fatale in this movie. Oh, it's so good. And so sexy, and she is so devious in this movie. So again, the movie revolves around Catherine Tremell. She is a crime novelist. I would call her books the kind of like 1 or 2 day reads. You know, the back in the day before you had your Audibles, the one you'd buy when you go on an airplane, and by the time you've landed, you've already finished and digested it. So she is a greasy, fun, good time crime novelist, and she is sleeping with a famous has-been rock star, Johnny Boys. And the movie opens with Boys being brutally murdered with an ice pick. And of course, you gotta get the cops involved. And who has been assigned this case? Well, none other than Nick Coran, who is played by Michael Douglas. That's right. I've got you a Michael Douglas sandwich for my top five. He was in my first with Fatal Attraction and my last with Basic Instinct. And he plays more or less the same character. I mean, imagine if his character, Dan Gallagher, had a change of heart and decided to leave corporate America, become a detective, and get strung out on cocaine. And there you have Nick Coran. That's right. He is a coked out, down and out cop. You know, he is not having a good moment when you are first introduced to him to this movie. And so he is assigned to the case. He meets up with Catherine and they want to talk to her. You know, they want to interview her because, ironically, Catherine has written a novel, her most recent novel, in which the protagonist is brutally murdered with, you guessed it, an ice pick. So, of course, that makes her a pretty juicy suspect, right? So, Catherine is trying to convince all of the cops, you know, of course, that would be such an idiotic thing for me to do. Why would I kill somebody in the same fashion that I had previously written about? But she also is pretty convinced that that puts her in a pretty safe standing because that gives her an alibi. So pretty quickly from the moment that this movie starts, it's pretty cat and mouse. I mean, Catherine has these cops right where she wants them, and more or less, this whole movie is just watching her fuck around with the police. I mean, she absolutely loves making them feel uncomfortable. Of course, there is like the iconic scene, you know, talking about earlier how Fatal Attraction was an iconic movie. This movie scene is so iconic. So this does not spoil the movie, but if you haven't seen this movie, this particular scene is a little bit of a icon spoiler, I should say. But she's in the middle of the interrogation room. So she's got Nick along with a couple of other cops. And she, again, they're having more or less a conversation about the case. You know, she's trying to convince them that she has absolutely nothing to do with this and she has no reason to be here, and that quite frankly, it would be ridiculous for her to murder someone in the exact same fashion that she's written about. And in that moment, she does a total femme fatale power play, and she is wearing, by the way, a very, very short dress, and she uncrosses her legs, revealing her full frontal vagina in a complete power play, and then crosses her legs back over again. And it's all basically done just to make all these cops completely uncomfortable. And it works. I mean, one of the cops is played by Wayne Knight, who is most famously known, I would say, as Newman from Seinfeld. I also like to think of him as the guy who was blinded by that crazy dinosaur in Jurassic Park. But he's one of the cops, and like you can see like the beads of sweat dripping from his face when he's watching it. And it's just such a total power move. I mean, in her mind, she's thinking like, yeah, I know what you're looking at. I know that you've seen it, and you're welcome. And just for the record, so I did a little bit of background on that particular scene, and it turns out that that was not written in the original script. So the director had actually had that happen to him in college. There was a woman that wanted to embarrass him, and so she too was going commando and decided to flash and expose herself to him, which did succeed in making him wildly uncomfortable. And so he wanted to put that scene in there, just having pull from his real life experience. And I've got to tell you, I mean, it works. I mean, even as an audience member, they show it because they want you to feel what the cops are feeling. They want you to feel this like, oh my gosh, whoa, 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 whoa. That's your vagina. And I don't know how I feel about it. It's just so good. So this movie, what makes it so fun is there's not one, but there are three femme fatales in this movie. So you obviously have Catherine, who's the OG. But as it turns out, Catherine loved sleeping with the late Johnny, but she also has a relationship with her girlfriend, Roxy. So Roxy is played by Liliani Sorrell, and by all accounts, you know, they're a very happy lesbian couple together. So you've got Roxy in the picture, and it's pretty clear that she is definitely the jealous type. So could it be Roxy? Could, in a fit of jealousy, could Roxy have murdered Johnny Boyce? I mean, it also is plausible, right? Because she would naturally have access to Catherine's novel to get the inspiration for the ice pick. No. But then that's not all. There is Dr. Beth Kramer, and she is played by Jean Triplehorn, and she is actually with Nick, but she is not all she seems to be. There's a lot of layers under that onion. So could it be Dr. Beth? Could it be Roxy? Could it be Catherine? Could it be that it was none of those people and it was somebody entirely different that's going to knock you off your socks? I don't know. You got to go see it. But this, it is such a good movie. It is so sexy. And you have all of these three women who are so beautiful and so sexy in their own rights use their sexuality in order to elevate themselves, but they leave a wake of death and destruction in their path. They are the definition of femme fatale. All right. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get right on in to today's newest movie, and that is Promising Young Woman. So again, to give you a quick recap, the movie is starring Carey Mulligan, and she plays the character Cassie. Now, Cassie is a former medical school dropout, and she is now working at a coffee shop. So she is a barista by day. And then you very quickly learn, this is all available in the trailer, that by night, she likes to dress up as scandally clad as possible and act like she is completely wasted. Now, the key word is act, because what she's really doing is she is bait for a, quote, nice guy to come up, ask if she's okay, offer her a ride home, and then proceed to take advantage of her. Now, of course, before things get to that place, she reveals that she is stone cold sober and essentially puts them in their place. That's all I'll say for that. And so you very quickly learn that she's doing this all for a purpose. She had a childhood best friend. They both grew up together, went to medical school together, and then one night while they're in school, something awful happens. Now, of course, luckily they don't show any of it, but it certainly is implied that her friend Nina was the victim involved in a pretty heinous gangbang rape situation. So, of course, it's a little triggering, and it is also implied that after the traumatic events, Nina was not able to emotionally process the events and ended up taking her own life. So luckily, again, they don't show any of this, but it is it's certainly implied. And so Cassie is on a mission, right? So she has this little black book, if you will, that she keeps underneath her bed, and she takes a tally of how many men she has successfully scared straight, if you will. And, you know, she's almost like a vagina vigilante, if you will. You know, she is absolutely determined to ridding the world, or at least her small town, of these sleazy guys that think that it is okay to take advantage of a woman because she's had too much to drink. Now, while this is going on, she is reintroduced through working at the coffee shop to a character named Ryan. So he is played by Bo Burnham, and he is a fellow medical school classmate of hers. Now, he, of course, he went all the way. He graduated. He's now a pediatric surgeon, and they have a really, really sweet courtship. I mean, honestly, he is in a lot of ways like the comic relief that is brought to this movie, and he is able to soften her a little bit and bring her out of this more or less like dark hole that she has been living in ever since she dropped out of medical school. And the movie really hops back and forth between watching her live this life where, you know, she's really not living it, honestly. You know, she doesn't have much of a personality outside of her one friend at the coffee shop, and going out at night and being this, you know, quite honestly, this like perfect femme fatale, you know, because she uses her sexuality and a little bit of vulnerability to lure in these men and then, you know, catch them red-handed, more or less. And so she's balancing between that while also seeing this new courtship bud from Ryan, and you're watching with every single date that they go on. You know, there's one amazing scene where they go into a gas station and they're picking out all different kinds of snacks, and the stars are blind, Paris Hilton song, you know, the even though the guys are crazy, even though the stars are blind, and they sing it together, which is just such an amazing throwback. I love that song. That song slaps. And so with every single exchange that they have, you watch Cassie start to soften and start to kind of consider letting this go. You know, maybe she's at a place where she's ready to accept her past and move on and have a future with Ryan. Of course, nothing in these movies is quite that easy. There's going to be some twists and some turns. And is Cassie ever going to be emotionally ready to move on? Or is she? You know, you don't know. And that is kind of what makes this movie fun, is that you quite frankly have no idea what direction it's going in. It is really unpredictable in that way. So the movie is written and directed as the directorial cinematic debut of Emerald Fennell. Now, she is the brains behind Killing Eve, and you can absolutely tell, like, there's certainly those vibes, you know, that kind of like female Dexter vigilante vibes to it. You know, this movie is a nail biter, and it does kind of shed a light on, you know, because of course the obvious enemy of this movie is the patriarch as a whole. You know, it's the idea that men make these horrific choices and that we just as a society make excuses for them. You know, the kind of, well, boys will be boys. But then it also pretty brilliantly highlights how quickly your mindset can change when it becomes personal. And that is one thing that I will say that I really, really like about this movie, because I do think that that is true. You know, I'm not going to go and dive in to the politics of this movie, but certainly I think with this situation and really any situation in life, it's really, really easy to stand back and have an unbiased opinion. But when it's personal, everything changes. And so it's fun to watch that light change in people's faces when they realize that it's become personal. This movie's a nail biter. It is a nail biter. I think you're going to be on the edge of your seat. I think you do have to take this movie with a little bit of a grain of salt, because I think they were going for a movie where, you know, you're kind of pumping your fist in solidarity to everything that they're doing. You know, you're kind of like, yeah, like, go for it. Like, you tell them. And I think sometimes they push the boundary perhaps a little too far, but ultimately you got to suspend your disbelief. I mean, this is supposed to be a dark comedy, so they're going to go there. But overall, I would recommend this movie. I am going to go ahead and give it about 3.5 stars out of 5, because again, I think that you do have to do a little bit of work about suspending your disbelief for it, but nonetheless, it's a nail biter. You're going to be on the edge of your seat. And at the end of the day, they are able to successfully take a subject matter that is very heavy and very triggering and still marry it with enough light elements that you're able to enjoy yourself. You don't feel fatigued afterwards. And honestly, I'm not going to spoil anything about it, but I will say that the ending definitely is a pretty good conversation starter. All right, guys, we did it. We did it again. Thank you guys so much for sticking it out with me. And if you decide to go and check out any of these movies, please let me know your thoughts. I would absolutely love to know what you thought about any of these top 5 picks. And if you check out Promising Young Woman, I want to know what you thought about it too. It would mean a lot to me if you would please rate, review, and subscribe. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll see you next week.